Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. For those of you who have just joined us, we're here to talk about health and nutrition, ways to improve the quality of our lives. Now, each day, for those of you who are not familiar with this program, I focus upon the good news. The good news is that we can do something about our well-being. The good news is that we don't have to suffer from all the myriad of conditions we thought we would have to suffer from. So we're going to take a journey today, and that journey is to see what are the issues that are important to you. We'll be taking calls throughout the show today, and today, since we've been talking with people around the country, we're going to go to Washington, D.C., WPFW, and talk with people there. If you're listening in the WPFW area, that's the larger Washington, D.C. metroplex, I'd like for you to give us a call. And the number to call us at down there is area code 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. And we'll see what we can do to help you with whatever conditions. Please keep in mind, I don't do any diagnosing over the air. That wouldn't be appropriate or proper. But what I can do is I can show you there's a lot of different ways of dealing with these problems. Now, I'm going to ask our engineer down in WPFW to turn off the music and to pay attention to the show, please, because I'm getting a music feedback, at least from that station, and I want to talk with people down there today. Let's take a look at some of the issues, some of the latest in health and nutrition issues, and once we get into that, then I'll shift over and see what's on your mind. I know we have a lot of people with a lot of questions and in the WPFW listening audience. And by the way, people all over the country, no matter where you're at, can benefit from these statements and that people be making down in Washington today. Just as there were people who were making questions or asking questions overnight on KPFK and WBAI, etc. Again, the number to call in from WPFW's audience is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. And when people get on the air there, we'll go to your calls. This comes from one of our listeners out there. And in fact, it's from our Washington, D.C. Support group, which is over down there. And I want to thank the people who've completed that. We had some spectacular results where people really changed their life around. Sent me a story made from the front page of the Washington Post. I haven't read it. And she says, "You often talk about the hazards of eating meat. Finally, the story was printed in a major newspaper. This story might be referenced in a future support group meeting for those who still doubt the harsh facts. I stopped eating meat after reading about the consequences in Tom Hartman's great book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunset. I enjoyed your latest appearance on our local Washington PBS station, as did a number of my friends, Al Zara." Thank you, Al, for sending me this. I'll quote it verbatim from the Washington Post. "Worries rise over the effects of antibiotics in animal feed. A 66-year-old woman was recovering from a heart bypass in a hospital near Detroit when she suddenly developed respiratory failure and a serious infection. Doctors quickly gave her an antibiotic that usually works. This time, however, it didn't. The bacteria causing the woman's infection were resistant to the drug. The woman's doctors immediately turned to a newly approved antibiotic, a powerful one designed specifically to attack the kind of dangerous antibiotic-resistant microbes that had infected her. But her physicians were dismayed to find that that drug didn't work either. The bacteria in her body were resistant to it as well. The woman died soon after. Cases like this around the country have caused rising alarm among infectious disease doctors and public health experts. They are also at the center of an increasing acrimonious dispute now before the Food and Drug Administration over how antibiotics are used in this country, specifically how farmers use them to promote the growth of livestock. Experts have long known that the overuse of antibiotics by doctors and their patients have reduced the ability of those drugs to cure infections. Now there's mounting evidence that the antibiotics widely used on farm animals are also diminishing the power of important antibiotics to help people. Giving antibiotics to animals in their feed can cause microbes in the livestock to become resistant to the drugs. People can then become infected with resistant bacteria by eating or handling meat contaminated with pathogens. Many of us believe there is a tremendous overuse of antibiotics for animals, said Marcus Zervos, an infectious disease specialist at William Beaumont Hospital in Royal Oak, Michigan, who was involved in the Michigan case. There is some strong evidence, and as well as strong opposition to our view, that animal antibiotics are undermining antibiotics for people. But this whole area has to be reconsidered. And by the way, most of the antibiotics used on the farm are not because the animal is sick. Instead, farmers feed livestock a low-level diet of antibiotics to attack bacteria that might require the animal's body to expend energy to kill it off. The animals are able to grow more quickly and, from a producer's point of view, more efficiently, hence more profit. But that's the problem. They end up now with food poisoning from Campylobacter and Salmonella bacteria in people. And when you do get sick with something and you need a antibiotic, that antibiotic just doesn't work anymore. I did my first report on antibiotic resistance in caveat emptor. That was a long time ago. I was just out of college. I did the research, and at that time I was able to interview a group of food specialist and FDA inspector and some others who said, we're using too many antibiotics. Now, that's the beginning of my career. I wrote a book called Body Pollution, and I remember it was attacked. It was attacked by the sugar industry and the dairy industry and cosmetic. Everybody attacked me. And so I went on a tour around the country. I got on a bus. My publisher wasn't one of the big ones and didn't have the expense account, so I took a round bus from city to city. And there I'd be met by a group of physicians and scientists on a show who had big folders. And they would come out with the fact that meat is important and vegetarians are unhealthy and vegetarians are anemic. And, we don't end up having a nation of weaklings. And I said, well, the gorilla's a vegetarian. The elephant's a vegetarian. Are they weak? Hippopotamuses are vegetarian. Rhinoceroses are vegetarian. You're looking at the strongest, longest-lived animals and mammals. So to suggest that eating vegetables will, by definition, make you weak is simply unsubstantiated by any science. But the fact is that you eat more meat than what the body requires, even if we did require our protein from meat. Now, having graduated from something they hadn't, dietetic school, having completed undergraduate, graduate, and doctorate degrees in human nutrition and public health science, something they had not, I had a great deal of experience understanding that how we are fed is simply wrong. But they were there on behest of special interest groups. And without exception, they had just misinformation. And this whole idea that we must have, well, we must have what? Meat? No, we must not have meat. But some habits are hard to shake. I remember in my family, the idea was that on Sunday you had a pot roast and with vegetables around it. We'd go to church in the morning. When we came back, it would be cooked and about 4 hours later. Of course, I eat the vegetables and my family eat the roast beef. And I never appreciated what vegetables could taste like because they all look like goo. You cook a vegetable for 4 hours and it just doesn't taste the same. But people just didn't eat raw salads. The only time you'd eat a salad is with iceberg lettuce, a cardboard-tasting tomato, and with some stupid kind of syrupy kind of salad dressing. But to go out into a garden and pick fresh vegetables and bring them in and eat them, nobody did that where I grew up. It just wasn't done. It was like a big deal if you had a beefsteak tomato and you would wash it off and put some salt on it and eat it and boy, that was just, that was the cat's meow. Or if you had blueberries, some wild blueberries, because nobody cultivated them, or blackberries, which were also wild. They were small and very sweet, and people would take pints of that around or however much they had to share with other people. And you talk about it for, you know, 6 months. Old Charlie brought me over some blueberries, best blueberries ever had. And I'd hear that story 4,000 times about some stupid pint of blueberries. Everything came frozen or canned or packaged. But take a step back and look at the dots, connect them. My grandmother lived a long life. She was the only one. And she lived a long life because she lived on a farm down in Little Hawkong, Ohio. And she lived on the farm and was a vegetarian. Now, that was just almost unheard of because my great uncle, my Uncle George, really took charge of raising all the different family members. I don't know how that came about. I think it came about because of the Great Depression. But he was a very wise man and a very, very decent human being. He was one of my favorites because every day after school, grade school, I'd run up to his house and he'd show me arrowheads that he had collected at Blanhassett Island. That's the island that was right off where my hometown was, where Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr had their duel. And that's where the Native Americans had lived. And he had all the, he was an archaeologist and by hobby. And his sister was an archaeologist by profession. I used to love looking at all these photos of these wonderful places that she had been all over the world on these hunts. And she also took on many of the habits of the diets of different people. She lived a long life because she didn't eat the regular food. But he ended up raising, for all intents and purposes, when the Great Depression hit and hurt everybody in a lot of large families. And we had a large family. My mother's side had 10 children. My father's side had about 8 children. That's a lot of kids, all growing up, all young, all during the Depression. So, kind of overseeing them. And his idea of a diet was radically different than my grandmother's, and they were really at odds. He believed that you had, first of all, everyone smoked. I mean, everyone. And it was just, the house was just always smelling of cigarette smoke, and they smoked those Camels cigarettes and all day long. Everybody drank coffee all the time. Everybody had sugar in their coffee. Everybody had to have Jell-O or something like that for dessert, and there always had to be dessert. And the salad was nothing more than what I mentioned. Never any variation, ever. If you got potatoes, they were generally French fries or scallop potatoes and macaroni and cheese, grilled cheese sandwiches. These were the things that you generally got, and very, very unhealthy. But that's what everyone got used to. And at the heart of all that was meat. And people would pride themselves of being able to still afford their 2-inch cut of meat. And I can remember as a kid hearing my father say, well, we're still okay. We can still afford our 2-inch meat. And I spoke with so many people who prided themselves that they could afford to give their family meat 3 times a day. It was either sausages, bacon, or ham in the morning. And the most expensive was Canadian ham. And to have Canadian ham was kind of like a big deal. Oh, you got Canadian ham? Yeah, we ate Canadian ham, some would say. Oh, and eggs. So people would have eggs and Canadian ham if they were wealthy. Eggs and bacon if they were poor. Eggs and sausages if they were in between. My grandmother, on the other hand, when I would be over there, she would have a hot cereal, oatmeal or wheatina, something like that. I mean, the real oats, you know, steel cut oats, the ones that had a kind of a gritty chew to them. You chew them with raw honey, berries, nuts, cinnamon. She put cinnamon in all these things, and raw milk. And that's what I would have. And I'd feel great. And for lunch, she would make this big salad. And it was the first time in my life I actually saw someone put fruit in a salad. I'd never seen that before. Now, a fruit salad was not the same. I mean, a fruit salad where I grew up was the stupidest thing you've ever seen. It had little marshmallows in it with fruit, sugar, and Jell-O. And they mixed all that up, and that's what they called a fruit salad. Now, she did it. She would get fresh fruits, cut them up, and put in fresh apple cider that she pressed from her own press. She was a little woman, wiry and strong and very religious, and she ran this whole thing herself. And then during the Depression, my mother and five of her family, four sisters and a brother, went to live there and work. And that's where my mother learned a lot of her important lessons in life from my Aunt Myrtle about how honor people who are poor, never judge someone because they're not of your same background. And when my mother was a teenager during the Depression, when she would forget those lessons, in fact, she was just younger than that. Let's see. She was about 12 years old, 10 years old. She would be forced to get a lesson. Boy, I remember she actually carried a bar of soap around with her. Yeah. And if you made one word or were smart alecky or you weren't respectful, she'd go over there and she'd stuff that bar of soap in your mouth. I was forever running away. Wherever she was, I'd run outside. And I was very obstinate about such issues. Anyhow, no one took her seriously, but did she have a lot of important principles? You bet she did. And she kept saying, I'm a tiny little kid, and I'm hearing her as a senior citizen. She's up in a tree shaking apples. And I'm looking up this tree, and she's way up there, and she's shaking them down. Of course, they're all falling on my head, and I'm saying, I don't like this. She says, collect these apples. These apples are good for you. Remember, you have an apple every day. You're not going to be sick. And I said, what about other fruit? Well, other fruits are good, too, but an apple a day is absolutely important. None of the things were ever sprayed. And she had what, quite simply, was one of the most perfect biodynamic integrative farms imaginable. Natural compost. I used the animals for manure and the cows and sheep for milk and the goats and sheep for milk and the cows for wool. And she did everything just like her parents had done. Remember, her parents were born in the Civil War. So I'm learning from a woman who is up in her 90s, whose parents were born in the Civil War. That's an interesting connection. But all those lessons that she had to give us, you don't need meat. Meat'll poison you. Meat's toxic. And she had these books. No one paid attention to books. For 30 years after she died, nobody ever opened up those boxes. Those books were from some of the great nutritionists and naturalists and vitalists of that time, and who talked about colonics, fiber, exercise in the wintertime for vigor, keeping the windows open, allowing proper ventilation, cleaning the mattress, washing your hands, proper hygiene, and things that today I'm sharing with people. Like, look at the doorknob. You know, I was recently in a foreign country, and a man was brought in who was considered the best chef. And by our standards, he was not very skilled at anything, but a nice man. And it's interesting when you look at what other people were having to contend with because they just don't have things. You know, didn't have a food processor, never worked on one, because it's a very economically deprived area. He could make a good rice and beans dish, but he was mainly experienced in working with pork and chicken and things I don't eat. But I'm watching. I'm watching him handle the meat and things for the other people who are also eating, and opening doorknobs and all this stuff, and never washing his hands, never washing utensils, never washing the plates. Their idea of washing a plate was to run some water over it, cold water. So, I suggested to him that there was a different way of approaching this. And I sat with him one afternoon and explained hygiene. And you would have thought that someone who had graduated from college and graduate school would have known about hygiene. Clueless about it. Absolutely clueless. No courses in it. And was also under the belief that meat was essential. It isn't. Never has been. And for people who had studied the work of Mr. Graham, who invented the Graham cracker, who is a big hygienist, and do you know that they were actually pressing carrot juice and vegetable juices in the mid-1800s? There was an enormous movement to clean the body, enhance the spirit, the vitalist movement. It was big all over the United States. And they had presses. They pressed all their juices and would ferment some into ciders. And others they would have fresh. They knew that from experiences with Native Americans that certain fermented beverages helped alleviate toxins from the body and added with bitters, and the bitters were everywhere, bitter herbs, that could purge any poisons out of the system. So there was a big movement to detoxify, cleanse. And they did. All kinds of ways. It was very interesting. And Harvey Kellogg came after Graham, and he was the king of health in America for 35 years, 40 years. After him came Bernard McFadden. McFadden was the king of health up through the 1950s in the United States. And then Gaylord Houser from the 40s and 50s, and then Carlton Fredericks from the 60s through mid-70s, early 80s, along with Adele Davis. And here was a person that no one ever took her seriously. She lived a longer life than any other person in my entire family's history. Everyone else followed my Uncle George. My Uncle George, meat was the basis of everything. Meat and dessert, white bread, coffee, cigarettes. Good people, ethical people, give you the shirt off their back, you bet. Honest, absolutely. Hardworking, to a T. Time, quality time, for anyone who wanted it. Hey, I never saw someone so patient in my life. They would give you whatever time needed to learn. And kids are so inquisitive. Kids have 10,000 questions for every question an adult would have. They'd answer every single one. Always there every night. So I'm very grateful for that upbringing. And I'm also very grateful for having learned from a woman who knew what we should have known. So when I started to see that my mother and my mother's family believed that the modern woman shouldn't have to spend that time in the kitchen, the modern woman would take the advice of the experts, the home economics teachers. And they were suggesting that let Betty Crocker do it for you. It's in a box. One of my aunts, who's still alive today at 85, she believed that food would be best frozen. So she would buy freezers full of everything and have it all organized and dated, very, very anal, very organized about everything. And she had a lot of vegetables and lots of fruits, but wasn't fresh. Her husband was the first person in my family. He was so serious about everything, he was taken seriously. He still smoked, but he took his vitamins. He read Prevention Magazine. And very conscientious. And that's why she's alive today. All the rest of them died early and were sick early. All of them had all the illnesses. So we baby boomers have to take a very careful look at where our parents are in their health, why they're suffering from dementia in their 60s and 70s or 80s, when they're not even halfway through life. They're at the end of their life. How did that happen? How did we get to where we have all these diseases that people shouldn't have till they're about 130, and we're not even getting them to make it to 70. My parents died at 58, both of them. So how's that possible? Look at the lifestyle. They didn't do it to hurt themselves. They did it because it was socially acceptable. Because everyone else did. Because the people they trusted said, do this. So today, with our internet society, and we're asking, who's got the message? Well, the message are by those individuals who have stepped back and taken a look, who's living longest, who's healthiest, who's happiest, whose life has meaning and purpose, more than just earning a living. And they're learning from that. And one of the largest single groups of individuals who've gotten the right message are our youth. Yes, there are the youth who are making the same mistakes that all youth have made throughout this century, but there's also a growing number of youth who are very conscientious of the lessons, even if their parents think they're crazy. They've become vegetarians. They've joined environmental action groups. They're even supporting green parties and things like that, even if they can't vote. So in some respects, our youth have more awareness of what's good for them than some of the most educated adults in America. So is it any wonder that farmers are giving antibiotics to their cows to get them fat? We are eating meat when we don't have to, shouldn't, it's not necessary. The meat industry is a $100 billion a year industry. It can afford to hire lots of science, and so we get misinformation. The dairy industry, the sugar industry, the egg industry, equally powerful. They know where to put their money to get influence and have. So what's the likelihood there's going to be any quantum shift? Well, if we had leaders who themselves exemplified healthy lifestyle choices, that automatically would help make the average person more aware and give them the opportunity to make change. But we don't have that. We have cheeseburger eaters, and you know, we have pill poppers, and we just don't have healthy leadership. And that's unfortunate. That said, you don't need meat. You don't need the antibiotics in your system. You don't need to end up with an infection and die because there's no antibiotic that'll work. So please start the process now of weaning yourself away from the things that ultimately could cause you to get really sick. And don't look at what other people have done as an excuse to continue doing it. Because everyone else does something wrong doesn't mean you have to do the same thing. You're more than a lemming. You're a human being. So let's start using our capacity for our own autonomous thought. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go to some calls now. I'll speak with people in this audience. Our number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Today we're just taking calls from our audience listening on WPFW, the Pacifica Foundation station, serving the greater metro complex area. We even have people up near Baltimore listening because I've gotten some email from them. And I have, as of today, been able to reestablish a new web for me, which can get you, it's GaryNull.com, but it's, we've got some antivirus stuff on there that protects it now. There was a bit of an effort to save all the information we have, but we did. I hope you've gone to GaryNull.com. It gives you the latest on health and nutrition update information. It's free. What's your name? You're on the air.
Victoria.
Hi, Victoria. Victoria, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Yes, I'm Victoria. I'm 42 years old, and I'm trying to become a vegetarian. I also have a thyroid problem, which is underactive, and I also take pressure medicine. 5 milligrams of Vizatep. So I'm really trying. I was doing your protocol one time over in Washington. I don't know what happened to the group. So my question to you is, I really want to learn how to eat like a vegetarian, but I have problems. I don't stick with it. So I'm calling to find out what I can do to really get on track with eating like a vegetarian.
Okay, let's sit back for a moment. You said that you were eating right, then you stopped. You don't stick with it. That's the problem. Let's go and find out what it is that you're not doing and why. Explain your motives. Explain what you feel, what you think, when you knowingly eat something you know is not good for you, and exclude and don't eat something you know is good for you. Tell us about that now.
Well, basically, I think I eat pretty healthy, but I started to put chicken back into my diet. I stayed off of it for a year, and I started to put it back in my diet. I have stayed off of dairy products, cheese, and I don't eat any red meat. So basically, I do pretty good, but sometimes I think I'm going to do it because of a weight thing, really. And I get a little frustrated because the weight doesn't come off like I want to. And I guess I'm around people that don't eat like a vegetarian, so I just deal with what they do. So I guess that's the real reason why I don't stick with it.
All right, let's examine both of those rationales. What are your feelings on racism?
My feelings on racism. I can be a little racist at times. You know, I deal with racism the way it comes to me.
Okay, so in other words, if you're around people who are racist, you could be racist. If you're around people negative, you could be negative. So what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, is you're willing to take the energy and the standards of people that you're associating with as if those in that moment are your own. Am I understanding what you're saying?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay, now, if someone does something that you know is wrong for you, for the world, for the universe, for whatever, what is the advantage outside of just being connected and having some identity with people of that entire negative experience? What do you think is good's going to happen? What possible good could happen when you do anything, think anything, that you know is not right?
Nothing's going to come out. Bad things are going to come out of it.
Okay, so if you don't want the consequences of bad things, then the solution would be what?
To do the right thing.
Okay, so doing the right things allows at least the potential for right things, but doing the wrong things can never get you the right thing. So you're fully aware, then, that the problem is not the meat or the chicken. And if you watched a chicken, if you went through a day with a chicken and watched it crap and eat its crap, would you want to eat something that eats its crap? Because if a chicken eats its crap, it becomes crap. So if you eat the chicken, you're becoming the chicken's crap. So why don't you just go out and find a chicken, wait till it craps, and eat its crap?
Yeah, right.
I mean, no, you got it. Really, you got to get down on your hands and knees and crawl around like a chicken and say, I'm doing what the chicken does.
But no, I know it's bad for me. I know chicken and meat and all of that. I understand. I know it's bad. But I just need to put some order to how to go about doing it. You know, a lot of times I work out right now. I'm lifting weights. And the guy that I'm lifting weights with, he tells me that I have to put protein in my diet. He wants to take fruit and stuff out of my diet. So,
okay, I got a question for you. Human sperm is protein. If someone says, I'm going to put some protein in your diet and you can get it from sperm, what would you say to that?
I don't think so.
Okay. That kind of goes with eating the chicken crap. So we're not going to eat chicken crap, and you're not going to get your protein from sperm, though you could get some from both. But they're inappropriate choices. So then it comes to which are the appropriate choices we should make. We're all going to make a choice. So the idea is, let's not rationalize to justify. There's enough of that. And when you look at your hypothyroidism, by having a diet that is high in animal proteins and animal fats, it drives estrogen. Estrogen driving can imbalance the thyroid gland. So just by cleaning up your diet, it's entirely possible to re-regulate your thyroid gland, which in turn would cause you to lose weight. So if you take a look back and look at the string of events, one that begets the next, just by making wrong choices, you end up with a condition you're not happy with. Don't look for the shortcut. If you're looking for the shortcut to get the weight off that you put on over a period of time and to have more energy when it took time to diminish the energy, then the likelihood is you're going to make all wrong choices again. You're going to look for the shortcut. I'm impatient. I want the results. What's your diet? you're eating pig's feet this week. Pig's feet is said by Dr. Such and Such that it'll burn. I'll eat pig's feet. Well, I just saw, you know, an infomercial, and it said that if I, you know, stand on my head and blow bubbles, well, I'll stand on my head and... You can't do that anymore. Been there, done that, doesn't work. So just stop everything. And look at what it is that you want. When you look in a mirror, always look at the body you want to see. Do not look at the body that you have. Visualize the dream that you want to achieve, not the place that you're at. When I'm training for a marathon, in my running, I visualize where I'm at and what I'm feeling through every mile of the race. So by the time I come to do the race, my energy is connected with the outcome. And it feels fun. And it's not a task. It's a joy. When I sit down to write a book, I don't sit and think, well, I just finished the first paragraph. What do I write now? No. I visualize what I want to say, what the message should be, what its purpose is, what its meaning is, and so I have a complete picture of the book. I've written it in my mind. Now all I have to do is translate it to whatever form I want to put it in. So we first have to liberate our creative centers, liberate that crown chakra, open yourself up without being guarded or defensive. And this is a process that you must connect only with positive people who've already done it. Now, if you look around the people in your own life, you may or may not find those people. If you do not find those people, then it's highly improbable that the people you have surrounded yourself with will either appreciate the journey that you're about to take or be able to assist you in any way with it. And there's absolutely no problem finding people to assist you in your journey. That journey could take you a long period of time, to which along the way there will be little plateaus that allow us to stop, focus on what we've gained, what we've learned, how we feel, rest our senses, and then regroup to look again and start the journey over. There is no final destination. The journey is the destination. So first and foremost, take an inventory of what you don't have for this journey. Do you have patience, discipline, passion, a commitment? Do you have a sense of unifying principles of life where you're willing to bring all the fabric together to make a tapestry? Or do you just end up each day having a lot of threads all over the place, none of it making sense? Life is kind of chaotic, getting from one day to one month to the next. Do you have the commitment to give yourself time for the healing process to occur in a natural way? Or do you want everything so rushed that you're going to bypass the natural way and then interfere in that natural process with something that's artificial or synthetic? These are simple principles. Take a look at the people in your life. Are they positive or negative? Do they offer constructive input or criticism? Do they tend to be more optimistic or are they more fatalistic? When you have a conversation with them, make a note. Just make a check mark on one side of the page. Positive statement, an X, a negative statement. And then at the end of the day, see how many checks and X's there are. People think that their relationships and friendships are supportive or positive until they do the simple exercise and think, whoa, I had no idea how many times a person was actually saying something that was just kind of self-serving and fatalistic. What they don't like and what they won't do and what they... And I just kind of accepted it. Now you're paying attention to it because remember, what you connect to, you become. You share the same energy. It's like a gang member. When I've counseled gang members, including in prison where I go and counsel them, they'll say, I didn't want to take the knife and slice the person in the face But it was an initiation rite. I had to show I was tough. And I said, it's tough to slash an old woman in the face. What if that old woman was your mother? Why don't you ask every one of these gang members, would they slash their mother or their grandmother or their sisters? Well, no, man. But you slash someone else's mother, sister, grandmother. Does that take courage or is that cowardly? Well, is it courage or cowardliness? And they stop and think of it. And I say, now take your ego out of the way. Act as if you weren't the person doing it. How would you judge it? Because that's how a jury judged you. That's how a judge judged you. That's how society judges you. But everybody else, I mean, no one else cared about me. And they cared about me. So what you're saying is that you needed these people in your life. Because you needed them, you allowed them to give you an energy. Well, now you see the consequences to yourself and to the people that you hurt. And you can't change anything. Nothing in the universe can ever be changed. Once it's done forever. All we can do is change how we want to deal with it in the future and how it's going to impact upon our lives. What lesson will we learn from it? Now, I'm suggesting that you take a careful look at everyone in your life and begin the process of eliminating all the people who are not there to unconditionally love you and support you in your journey of wellness. You can't be healthy if you're not happy. So this is also has to be a journey of reconciling all of your pain and anger, no longer investing in it. Because when you wake up in the morning and you invest in some negative thoughts, those negative thoughts are the currency of your day. What does a negative thought buy you? What's its value? What do you get with negativity? Vengeance, violence, anger? You get nothing constructive. Nothing positive is going to come from that. You're not going to lose weight and feel better. You're not going to look younger, not going to have more vitality, not going to get your thyroid functioning again. So you have to stop long enough and slow down so you're not distracted. Well, what distracts you? Make a list. Here are the things in the day that distract me. I've got all these things to do. What is watching television one of them? Eliminate it. Listening to radio? Eliminate it. Reading newspapers? Eliminate it. Because none of that means anything to you as a person. Conversations on the phone that waste your time. Restrict it to 4 minutes and then eliminate any that are non-constructive. Well, then you're going to be left with this big gaping hole in the middle of your 24 hours. And you've got to fill it. And then you start to realize, whoa, I didn't realize how much my life was just an intentional distraction. And now I'm seeing that. So, now you have time to fill. Fill it with what will help you achieve your goals. How will that help you achieve your goal? Well, now you'll set time aside for exercise. Where you'd watch television, you're certainly going to be watching more than an hour a day of television. With that hour a day of exercise, will re-regulate your hormone levels, create a detoxification, speed up the cleansing process from your kidneys and your liver, help rejuvenate your thyroid gland. You can set time aside for writing letters of forgiveness. Letting go of the past, hurts, pains, and betrayals, all the things that you have felt justified, why you got to invest your anger one more time and react to it. No, you don't. Because every time you think a negative thought, you've displaced a positive. Every time you hold on to any anger, you displace the joy and optimism that allows healing. So you've got to replace every negative with a positive. Think of the hobbies you would get joy in doing, but you've allowed yourself to feel there's no time for them. Think of the books that you would have read, that you would have found growth from, the classes you could have taken. Think of the friends, the true friends that you have not spent quality time with because there's been no time to spend. Think of the shopping that you could do going to a farmer's market, taking an organic vegetarian cooking class, taking a yoga meditation class, having someone like a Ama therapist, a Reiki master, a reflexologist, just having someone work on your feet for an hour. It helps stimulate the healing, lymphatic drainage, increases meridian contact, feels good, and is inexpensive. When was the last time you allowed any of that to happen? And now do you see where this process begins? You there?
Yes, I'm here.
What have you learned?
From what you said, a lot. I have learned a lot. And that's true. I do let a lot of people take my energy. And I think that's why I don't concentrate on the things that I need to do for myself, because I get so involved. And that's true. Everything you said is true.
Okay. Now, there is a woman who lives down in the Washington, D.C. area. Her name is Christina Stevens. She was very helpful to us when we had our health support group. In our last meeting in the health support group, we finished a group that was going for a year and another group for a half year. That was about 2 months ago. But from what I understand, and I've been out of the country, I've been away, traveling, helping do my own work that's needed in an effort to learn, share, bring, care, and heal around the world. I'll be back in a few days, though. And then I'm only there 2 days, and I've got to get back out for another 4 weeks. But I've gotten a lot of emails of people from the Washington, D.C. area who were in the health support group who felt that it made such a difference in their lives. On their own, they would like to continue. Now, I can't go down there because my schedule is just, it is focused in getting all this current projects done. But I'm going to ask Christina, who is, she herself is moving from what I understand. She's, because of the information she got and the inspiration from the health support group, she's helped herself, and she realized that she would like to be in a different area with her family of the United States, around different people, and doing some very creative projects. And she's a uniquely creative person, so I'm sure she will succeed at that. But I'll ask her to act as a catalyst to get people who've been through the changes, who have gotten that support and feedback from each other, who've had the camaraderie of sharing experiences, because we have a buddy system. Every person has to get the names and phone numbers of five people, so if they ever are in a crisis or have a problem or starting to go back to old ways, they can call people and get some positive feedback and some inspiration, motivation. And in New York, we have what's called an advanced group. In fact, I'm lecturing before it this weekend. And I haven't had a chance to lecture for it in about 4 months, so it's a packed house. We should do something like that down there. So I don't have her phone number, but if you look under Christina Stevens in the phone book, and if I get her phone number, I'll share it with you, and then maybe she can get a an informal group going, and where people can come together on a whatever basis they choose and share their stories, their progress, look for questions that other people need answering, help them. And that's completely doable. In fact, I'll tell you how doable it is. We have a health support group in Los Angeles, and for almost a year, I wasn't able to get out there. Do you know that we only had about a 5% reduction because they were meeting on their own? I had sent them out lecture tapes I'd done and audio tapes. But still, beyond those tapes, it was the interaction of the people. Everybody's got something that they know that is unique. I'm sure that you have many, many gifts that you could share with other people that other people would find of interest. You have interests and hobbies. You have knowledge. Isn't that right? Yes?
Yes, it is.
So imagine if people could learn from you and you could learn from them. That's the basis of creating a healthy support system that will be there for you when you're going through these changes. So that's what I will do. And on an upcoming program, I will get Christina's phone number, or however, maybe she doesn't want her phone number given out, however she'd like to be contacted. And before she does move herself, which I understand is going to be in the near future, I'll ask her to help maybe coordinate that, so people who want to can come together and look. When you've gone for a year and a half through all these changes, you have a lot of knowledge. and you have a lot of experience and a lot of insight. And so we're talking about 150 people who've done that. So more than enough to have a group put together. So that's what we'll do, all right?
Okay.
You. All the best to you.
Thank you very much.
Bye. I'm Gary Nall, talking about the issues that make a difference, trying to get people on the right track. There is hope for everything. We can all change. This is the program in the United States that deals with hope, that tries to turn negatives into positives, that shows people that there is a solution no matter what problem we're faced with. So give a call, just in Washington today at 202-588-0893. Let's take our next call. What's your name, please?
Wes.
Wes.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm glad to be on the air. I'm 19 years old, and I've just started listening to your program in the last few weeks. And I'd have to say that I really, really enjoy it. I really think you have a lot of great things to say. And thus far, I've already, you know, taken what you've said and told my family and some friends and tried to get them on the right path, because I think that, you know, it's definitely a lot of good stuff going on. But I wanted to ask you a few quick questions. First was about skin health. I try to wear sunscreen pretty much every day, but I was also wondering, just being a teenager, if there's any natural sort of, I guess, lotions or soaps that could help with acne, or if there's any natural foods to eat or something along those lines.
Do you suffer from acne?
A little bit. Not bad acne, but I just have a lot of distrust in the pharmaceuticals and things that I've been given by doctors that seem to just dry up my skin and not really do anything positive, not really help. So.
Okay, let me answer that one. When it comes to acne, understand that acne is both physiological and hormonal, as well as psychological. And the psychology of it is that you can have acne eruptions based upon whether or not you're under stress, and so and whether or not your system is too acid. And if you have an acidosis, that's a condition in which your body chemistry becomes overly acidic. Now, if you have insomnia, or if you have some water retention, or arthritis, migraines, if you have burning sensation on the skin, if you have constipation, difficulty swallowing, if you have any kind of little, like a little pimple in the mouth, a little bump on the tongue or the roof of the mouth, that is because you're too acid. Now, acid and alkalinity are measured according to the pH, which is the potential of hydrogen. That's what pH stands for, potential of hydrogen. Water with a pH of 7.0 is considered neutral. Neither acid nor alkaline. Anything with a pH below 7 is acid. While anything above a 7 with a pH is alkaline. The ideal pH range of the human body is 6.0 to 6.8. The human body is naturally mildly acidic. So now you have to look at what you've eaten, what you drink, and whether that will impact upon an acid. If it does, skin blemishes is one of the very first places you see it. Kids tend to have a lot of foods which produce acid. Ketchup and alcohol, coffee, eggs, flour-based products, all your floured products, meat, milk, sugar, soft drinks, shellfish, chicken, pepper, pastas, organ meats, those all create acid. Whereas your alkaline foods are your fresh fruits, most vegetables, grains, and nuts and seeds. Well, unless you're a vegetarian, you're going to have that local acidosis, which can lead to skin problems and breath problems and bowel problems. In fact, I counseled recently a kind of interesting case. There was a 18-year-old young lady who came with her mother and father to see me, and they had the mother and father had been in a health support group, and I always counsel people who are in the health support groups. And they said, our daughter's got a serious problem. She has chronic bad breath. Well, she was an extremely attractive young lady. And the problem was that when you're that attractive, and she was embarrassed because her boyfriend said that, you know, she had a problem with the breath. I mean, and if you can imagine, that's a big issue. I mean, big issue when you're a teenager is your breath stinks, your body stinks. Uh-oh. That just kind of stigmatizes you no matter how pretty you are. And there's also this myth in our psyche that we'd like to think that people are very handsome and debonair and beautiful and attractive and sexy, that somehow they're different. They're cleaner, or they don't have smells, or they're... Well, in this case, that was not true. In most cases, not true either. I can promise you I've counseled some of the most beautiful actors, actresses, and models in the world. And they're just like everyone else. It was the diet. She had been hung up on a high-protein diet. She had nothing wrong with her physique, but not in her mind. In her mind, she was just overly fat. She was not fat. So she had been eating all kinds of protein. Eggs, cheeses, meats, milk. No fruits, no vegetables. This had created a local acidosis and a local autotoxemia. I suggested a complete cleansing program, juices, herbal teas, no animal proteins, no dairy, no sugar, starting on a vegetable diet, and in under 10 days. Bad breath, body odor, bad body odor. I mean, whoa, I'm sitting across from her, and I mean, it reeked. And yet she had said she used deodorant, but that's one of the things that can happen. She also had some blemishes. All cleared up. Changing the acid in the diet can change our breath, our body odor, our skin quality, our energy level. Something that simple. Didn't even require a vitamin to do it. No vitamins, no minerals. Not that I wouldn't advocate some in her case, but just that simple a change was enough to make a difference. So start on that level of getting the acid alkaline right. Make the right selections, eliminate the others. And this time of year, the best juice for cleansing, watermelon and lemon juice combined. Once, twice a day. Vegetable juice is good also. And tomato juice is a good change. In hot weather, you take tomatoes, put them in a blender with some garlic, a little horseradish, and a little ginger. And you blend that up, put in an avocado, blend that up, and chill it, put in some cayenne pepper, and you talk about something's going to open up your sinuses. Whoa, the ultimate detoxifier. That'll detoxify it, cleanse you, but you'll feel good. Now, you want to dilute it to taste so you can actually tolerate it. But that's a great cleanser and detoxifier for your intestines. Remember, most bad breath comes from your intestine, not your mouth. Clean the intestine, your breath sweetens. All right. Good to speak to you.
Yes, thank you very much.
We're out of time, so I want to thank you very much for calling. Hey, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank you all very much all over the United States for listening, and specifically our listeners down on WPFW in Washington, D.C. Great group of people. And Lou Hinkins, Bob Dyer, and all the others. Thank you very much. And Wanda for engineering down there. I'm Gary Nall. We'll be back tomorrow taking more calls and helping people realize there's good news when it comes to our health.